is a beautiful 75-degree day in Southern California. The crowd filing into the Forum in Inglewood.
Inside the Forum at the corner of Manchester and Prairie.
Whether you're kicked back in the lounge or grinding in the film room, the block is always hot for the Lakers.
The Los Angeles Lakers are the world champions of basketball.
It's the Great Western Forum.
Chased out by James. Blocked by LeBron.
The Magic, he pivots a 360 turn. He's around one. He's around two. Magic to Green underneath.
On the ball to Shaq. Screen.
A windmill.
They're going crazy at the Fabulous Forum.
Hosted by Anthony Irwin, Pete Zayas, and Jovan Buha.
It's showtime.
I think... If he can't, like, I do think he can score against Hartenstein. I don't think that, like, Hartenstein is Wemby in there, right? And even Chet, for as great as he is defensively, like, he's given up 50 pounds to Ayton, 40 pounds to Ayton, right? So if he can leverage his physicality in the way that he's capable of, I think he could win enough of those matchups. But I think it's got to be, like, first and foremost, getting position, sealing, catching, and then also, like, battling on the glass and playing with a high motor. So, I mean, I think he's done that more often than not recently. So I am optimistic going into the series, but I would be lying if I said I was, like, blindly optimistic, because I did see on film, in my opinion, that he just was not up to par in the first three matchups. And like he kind of, because Luka didn't play well in the two games, because Austin had his struggles, and because the Lakers just got stomped, it was like, it kind of flew under the radar. But, like, in rewatching, I was like, yeah, DA was kind of invisible out there. And he's a guy that is, as JJ likes to say, like, he's the ceiling raiser on this team. And when he's playing his best, yep, when he's giving you 14, 16, 18 points and 10, 11, 12 rebounds, like, that just changes the dynamic of this group on both sides of the ball. So I would like to see that version of him in this series. And I think Pete mentioned the point about, like, this being, you know, the scientific method for the Lakers and their offseason. Like, I think it's one thing to do it against the Rockets and in that group and outplay Şengün. Like, I think, like, DA deserves a lot of credit. I also think that some of that's on Şengün and, like, his own limitations defensively and just, like, him being the anchor of a defense, right? Like, he just can't really do it, as we saw. It's another thing to do it against this team. And I think even if the Lakers lose this series, and even if it's not even a competitive series, but DA holds his own, mm-hmm, and we can walk out of the series saying, like, hey, he outplayed Isaiah Hartenstein, and, like, he didn't look out of sorts in this series. That would go a long way in me having confidence with him being at least a short-term solution at the five. If he gets his butt kicked or he replicates what he did in the regular season, I'm out. I'm just like, you know, the Lakers need to move on, and, like, maybe he could be a backup, but he cannot be the starting center moving forward. So, like, that's going to be a really big thing. In terms of the rest of the guys, like, I thought Jackson had some moments, particularly in that game in LA, and he ended up closing that game over DA. So I think there is some stuff with Jackson in the pick and roll, his verticality threat that the Lakers can, you know, unlock and leverage. But, you know, with him, it's just going to be a matter of, like, can he stay out of foul trouble, like, not pick up the offensive fouls, which I feel like there's been a slight uptick lately with him. Just play more mistake-free basketball, because if he has some of those stretches that he's had in the past where he'll make multiple mistakes and he gets the verticality foul, he gets the offensive foul, you know, he gets into it with the ref or whatever, and it's like, I think he's got to keep his head on straight for the series. But I do think it's a big DA series. Like, ideally, DA's playing in the mid-30s, and if he's holding his own, then I think the Lakers are going to be competitive.
With respect to DA, I think this is a much more difficult series for him, Anthony, than the last one. With Şengün, on top of the other things that Jovan described about Hartenstein and Chet, Şengün's much more of an on-ball player. And the way that he is going to attack, especially with KD out, he really wants to be physical with you. And so much of his game is, I'm going to hit you and kind of maul you in a way that DA can totally stand up to that. And he's got great length that, and if the defensive problem for DA is right in front of him, I think that's when he's at his defensive best. What I think OKC really challenges for him is sort of his reaction time. And there's like, they really are going to challenge the Lakers' speed, not just like from a foot speed perspective, but from a, like, I see this, but now I see that. And like, they play the game faster in a way that requires your defensive five to really read the game faster. That I think that I agree with the sentiment. I think this is more of a Jackson series than last one, whereas last one I thought was a very difficult one for Jackson with the strength deficit that he's at against Şengün. And so I would actually be fairly surprised if DA is good in this series. I'd be pleasantly surprised. I think he can be active on the glass. And I think there are going to be some groups that you can match him up with from an offensive perspective, that maybe the Jalen Williams at the five groups. I think this is going to be.
Am I the most optimistic on DA in this? Because I feel like I've been pretty out on him still. But I don't know. I feel like I don't think he's going to have like a. I don't think he's going to replicate the numbers he had in the Houston series. To be clear, yeah. Like I'm not going that far. But I think if we're drawing a line in between where he was against OKC in the regular season and where he was against Houston last round, I think he's going to be more on the Houston side, and that I think would be something that, you know, would be a positive. But if he's on the other side of that line, then the Lakers are screwed. And also I think he shouldn't be back.
I totally agree. I think OKC just challenges different things than Houston did, in a way that, like, he's going to have to be reacting to stuff and like talking, communicating, rotating in a way where his problem was right in front of him a lot of times against Houston. That I agree, if he can hold up in this series, regardless of the overall series result, like if he's solid, and he didn't even have to outplay Hartenstein, it's just, to me, it's all relative to contract number, right? It's you hold your own, you look good in this series, then I think that, because I think that part of the playoffs is like, you've got to be able to beat a Houston that plays that style at the five, and then beat an OKC that plays the more even five out. Like, that's going to be a challenge for DA. There are going to be times he's going to have to close out to his man at the 3-point line a lot more than he did in the last series.
So do you think it's more of a Jackson series?
I do. I think, like, I don't think it's like he plays 35 minutes or anything like that, but I don't think it's going to be like the 36-12 or whatever it was eventually, you know, in this Houston series. I think it'll be more of a like 28-20 in DA's favor.
One thing that I think kind of flew under the radar because he was getting so many looks so close to the basket is Ayton didn't look particularly confident with his like push shots and mid-range jumpers and stuff like that. And I think against this OKC defense, the Lakers are really going to have to thrive in the mid-range. And I think, you know, I think Rui, that plays into his strengths. I think Austin taking those middies when he gets those is going to be critical for him. And I really think when Ayton sets a screen and he gets the ball in a short roll, he's going to have to operate in that free throw line area. And I think that's going to go a long way in setting the tone of what kind of series he's going to have.
Love that. Totally agree.
Anything else that you guys are kind of looking at, you know, going into the series, Jovan? Like, what do you?
I have a question for you guys. We've touched on some of this, but I'm curious to just get your guys' take on it. So, looking at the 12 losses that the Thunder had with Shea this season, there were three statistical trends that really stood out. So, they always win the possession game to some degree because they are the best team in the league at taking care of the ball, and I think they were second best behind Detroit in terms of opponent turnover percentage. But as JJ's pointed out, you know, top five in steals, blocks, deflections, chart, you know, all that stuff. So they're an elite defense, right? So in losses, that gap between, you know, their turnover possession battle in wins was smaller. They still won it, but it was a smaller percentage in terms of like their turnover percentage was a little bit higher, their opponent turnover percentage a little bit lower. So that margin for them was a little smaller. Then they gave up, they got dominated on the glass in losses, gave up a bunch of offensive rebounds, and like the rebound percentage was decidedly against them. And then the third and final thing was opponent 3-point rate spiked in losses. I think it was a 41% 3-point rate, so 41% of your shots from deep, and then opponents also shot 41% on threes in their losses. So of those three things, of like 3-point rate going up and the percentage going up with it, like dominating the glass to some degree on both sides, or limiting the turnovers and also forcing their turn. And again, you probably lose the possession battle, but at least lose it by like a more respectable gap. Which one of those three paths do you think is most realistic for the Lakers? Are a couple of them realistic? And like, how do you see those three? We already touched on some of the turnover stuff, but like, I guess maybe more with the rebounding and the shooting, because one thing with the Lakers, like they have shot second best 3-point percentage of anyone in the playoffs up to this point, but they're also taking the lowest volume of anyone in the playoffs. Whereas OKC has actually ramped up. They're taking the second most threes of anybody right now in the playoffs, but they're fifth in 3-point percentage. So like right now on paper, I would say like OKC kind of has a slight advantage, at least in all three of those categories. But if the Lakers can tilt one or two of those in their favor, I think that's like their pathway to winning this series. What's so I guess which one do you think is most realistic?
What's the
I'm hesitant to say 3-point shooting because it's so in like Luke Kennard's like fiber and his DNA to just like dribble past the guy closing out at him. And I think Rui is kind of wired the same way. So I don't see where the volume on 3-point shooting is going to come from. So, and then, you know, turning OKC over every time they turn the ball over, it's usually called a foul anyway. So like, I think you kind of have to, like dominate on the boards.
Also, we went 56 minutes without mentioning the refs or free throws. That's like, that's got to be a podcast record for an OKC preview.
I think it has to be the boards, though, right? Like, it has to, you know. And
LA, LA won the rebounding battle the last two games against the Rockets and the offensive rebounding battle the last three. So it has been trending in the right direction. Yeah. I'm with you. I think that's the pathway.
I'm going to pick 3-point rate. And the reason for that is partially the February 9th game, the one that wasn't a butt kicking that Luka didn't and Shea didn't play in. It makes me wonder if they're going to go small at any point this series as well, because there was a group they found at the end. That was a fun game back and forth. Lakers went up by like 7 or 8 in the third quarter. It was like, oh, look at our Lakers. You know, we didn't have Luka, they didn't have Shea, but Jalen Williams was back and he was playing pretty well. And then OKC, you know, makes their push in the fourth quarter and, you know, they're up by 7 or 8 and we go small and it's Kennard, Rui, LeBron, Austin, and I want to say Marcus was our fifth. And they couldn't stop the Lakers offense. Now, the Lakers won those minutes like 12-8 or something. It was a very high scoring stretch right there, but OKC also hit some nice shots. It wasn't entirely, you know, bad defense by the Lakers. They gave up a crucial offensive rebound to Chet that sort of swung the game right at the end there. But I think that the Lakers have the capability to go smaller, but I think the main statistical difference from the stats that they've already accrued is Austin's return facilitates more pick and rolls than there have been in those other games, right? That they accrued those stats in, that then it facilitates more of those corner threes from Rui or just like a drive and kick to get the blender going that do end up resulting in a three. Lakers had to play kind of a weird style of basketball those first couple of games. And then Smart and Kennard being as good as they were at the front end of that series on offense was a, you know, them being able to step up into that usage was killer, but they had to just kind of figure it out in some ways that I think getting Austin back to run some ball screens and just classic, you know, NBA offense, I think will generate more threes.
Can the Lakers survive Austin Kennard minutes defensively?
I think they have a better shot of doing that than they did against Houston, in part because Houston's really trying to maul you. Now, OKC has their mauler version of their team as well. Like they can be whatever team they need to be in terms of what they can morph into. So you have to be careful against who. I think it is more plausible against them. And I think Kennard sort of like slashing around and just moving around is going to be really a lot, you know, more helpful than say against the switching units that Houston had if Şengün wasn't on the court.
I think they're going to have to because the Lakers had a 107 offensive rating in the first round. They had a 95 offensive rating against the Thunder in the regular season. you're not, I mean, obviously you're not winning with a 95 offense rating, but even the 107, like OKC right now, I think, you know, I touched on it a little bit, but like they've shifted some things offensively, strategically, and it might've been a Phoenix specific adjustment, but I mean, they put up a 127 offensive rating in that first round. And again, second in 3-point rate, second in offensive rebound percentage. Those are not things that they did in the regular season. So like with J-Dub out, partly, and also I think with the Phoenix matchup, and if Phoenix doesn't have a lot of size, so they were able to exploit that on the glass. Their guards did a good job with the offensive rebounding. Like they kind of shifted some things in that series that weren't part of their regular season profile. But point being, like they've been scoring the ball at a high level in the playoffs, and this is a much different series, I think, from that perspective of, with, you know, to Pete's point earlier, like the first round was definitely a defensive series for the Lakers. The pace was slow. I think they had like a 92.4 pace for the series. So, I mean, that's, we saw a lot of sub 100 scoring games. I don't think, I would be surprised if any of, like, if any of these games go where the winner is under 100. I think this is more of a 110, 115, 120 type series. And for the Lakers, you got to be careful, obviously, shifting it too offensive. But I do think they're going to have to throw out some of these lineups of like Rui, Austin, Luke, and stuff like that. Because if you can't score at a certain level, I think OKC is going to find a way to get to the 110, 115. And like if you're at 95, you're losing that game by 15, 20 points. So I think LA, they're going to need to put points on the board. Like this is not the Rockets where it's going, like there will be some rock fight nature to some degree, and OKC can go cold. We've seen, sure, you know, some of those games, yep, where they make like seven threes and they just, you can't make anything. But I do think with their pace and with like a guy like AJ Mitchell, who I think is gonna be a bit of a matchup problem for LA, and like how you're putting all this attention with Shea, but like you can't overlook that guy. I think he's really blossomed this year. I just think that they're going to have to score at a certain level where like they might have to have those Austin Kennard, like kind of defensively questionable groups, that the goal is like find a way to score at a high enough level to at least tread water, if not win those minutes.
Final predictions. Do we want to do that? Are we open to that yet?
Yeah.
I'll kick us off. I have My optimism has run out. I have OKC winning this in five. I just think they're too good at all of the things that really bother the Lakers. And now look, if the Lakers can get that split in the first couple of games there in OKC, I do think this is a long series, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, that situation notwithstanding, I think this is probably a short one. Pete, where are you at?
I'm in the same spot. My heart wants to go to six, that they tough it out and, you know, at least get it back to LA. But with Houston, I was like, no, we kicked their butts a couple of times very recently, yeah, and they stink at several aspects of the game collectively, that OKC is not that. They are not overrated, and they're not like, I do think it's remarkable that we talk about them this way when J-Dub is out and not expected at all. That's their second best player. He's, you know, their second highest paid guy, that just him not being there, they're still this juggernaut that, yeah, I want to say 5.5, but I'll go five. How about you?
I'm kind of with Pete in the five, you know, 5.5. I said five
like
last night.
Overtime in one of the games? Is that like?
On my serious prediction. Like, I think JJ put it well. Like I mean they're in the you know, back-to-back, yep, double digit net rating club with the Bulls and the Warriors, and I think, you know, they have to finish the season, because I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse. We did that with the 2016 Warriors, but if they can pull off the back-to-back, I think we are talking about, I mean, first back-to-back champion since 2017-2018 Warriors, but this might be the best team we've seen since that Warriors team, arguably. So I don't think there's any shame in losing to most likely the eventual champions in round two. Also, we haven't really touched on it, but the Lakers are without Luka Doncic, and like being without your MVP candidate, player of the month in March, two-time player of the month, like, that's a big blow that, you know, I think we could be talking about a 6 or 7 game series if Luka was healthy going into the series and the Lakers had proper time to prepare for this. So I think it the Lakers are playing with house money to a degree here, and we will learn a lot about who fits, who doesn't, who should stay, who shouldn't, how much money they should make. We're going to learn a lot in the next week and a half here. But I also think the schedule, like, it's starting in OKC. That's a really tough environment to play. It might be the best home court in the league. Also, the every other day nature of the schedule. Like, I think those are a couple of things that kind of work against the Lakers, as we saw them wear down a little bit in the Houston series. So, yeah, I'm like 5.5, but that's not a real number. So I'll lean 5.
Yeah, as I always say, when I am kind of lower on the Lakers or whatever, I hope to be wrong. I hope that, you know, Lakers fans can bring up this clip of us all predicting, Thunder in 5 and dunk this into oblivion. That would be incredible. I'd be all kinds of pumped for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made this point on my show last night. I picked Rockets in 6, and I thought Kevin Durant was playing, but he did. I think it maybe go 7 with KD. I don't know, but I still think the Lakers won that series. To Pete's point earlier, like, the Lakers were clearly the better team, and they showed that in the statement when game 6. I mean, they're the better team. I mean, you could argue Houston looked better without KD. Like, the worst they looked in the series outside of game 6 was with KD. So I was completely wrong on that. But the last two times I picked the Lakers to win a series, 2023 Western Conference Finals against Denver and 2025 first round against Minnesota, and they lost both those series. So maybe me not picking the Lakers is a good thing. So I'll keep not picking them into a 18th championship.
Yeah, I'm really curious how LeBron's going to approach game 1. I think he knows that he has one haymaker to throw in those first couple of games, and I think the Lakers go with whether or not that haymaker lands.
I think it's important that it's similar to the Houston series and that we sort of surprise them early on. Is that series basketball, like, you can only surprise the other team for so long, and by a certain point, not too long into the series, it's like, we know who you are and what you do, and you can make little adjustments, and this is our bigger look and this is our smaller, but this is kind of who you are, and this is the stupid dribble move that you do that nobody else does, you know what I mean? And but I know it now by game 3 that I think it's really important that the Lakers sort of baffle them with bullshit in game 1 and jump out in a way that I don't think this can be a sort of like measure them out type of, like, they've got more firepower than the Lakers do. And so if you're operating at a disadvantage, you actually have to kind of set the terms and jump on them in a lot of ways that we can't afford to wait.
You got to go punch the bully in the nose.
That's right.
And then get a flagrant 2. All right. So.
And they sweep kick you and don't get called for it.
If somebody ever punched Shea, Adam Silver would walk onto this court and arrest
him. I was actually talking about Lou Dort, but
future Laker Lou Dort. No.
I thought for a moment that it might make some sense to play Maxi in some Lou Dort minutes. Just like if he gets up to his shenanigans, have Maxi go out there and be like, nope, not this series.
Yeah. Or Vando. Yeah. I think Vando would mix it up with him too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, like one of those two guys, I think, has to, because it's going to happen. And you know that OKC fans are going to be in our mentions telling us, oh, no, he always moves like that. It's like, yes, that's the problem.
it reminds me of the clip of Bruce Bowen when he just like karate kicked Wally Szczerbiak in the face on the closeout. It's like, that's how he moves. That's how he closes out.
Bowen is such a good comp to Lou Dort. Like, it is the same, and like, immense respect to both of them as defenders overall, but the, like, come on, man. Like, very, very similar between those two players.
Well, I was going to say, like, it's ironic that OKC fans defend Lou Dort when, remember, it was against Steven Adams while he was on the Thunder, the Draymond kicked him in the nuts, and Warriors fans
kicked
tried
him in the
to
nuts
say
a couple
it was a
times,
natural
I think.
Shooting. Yeah. But they, like, Warriors fans try to call it natural shooting motion, and Thunder fans weren't having any of it. Now they're like, no, it's his natural playing motion. It's like, come on, man.
It's who we are as people.
Yep. Anyway, this has been an absolute blast. I'm going to get out of the way here. Pete, anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, game 1 on the offside chat. Those have been super fun. Come join you and I over there. And that's it. How about you, Yova?
Buha's Block, Lakers Collective, and Buha's Block merch is live. So nice. Posted on my channel, posted in the show notes. So we got t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, notebooks, a bunch of stuff. So check all that out if you're interested.
Is it just like a black t-shirt? Like, I hope that one of your items
black t-shirts. Just a black t-shirt. I got a purple one in there. I got a yellow one in there. I got a
is
little
there
bit
any
of color,
yo-yo incorporation?
Not yet. Not yet. I'm okay, working
you gotta
on that.
Get on that. Yeah. That's the second round.
But yeah.
Nice. Congrats, man.
I got to catch up to you guys. Pete has merch. Jovan has merch. I got to get
my
merch
hoodie on right now.
Yeah. Sick. That's an
insane graphic. That's incredible.
It's a super comfortable too. This is the most comfortable hoodie that I have. So, over at Cotton Bureau, I guess I'll plug that. Yeah. You want to get a LFR hoodie? Yeah.
The only merch I would start with is like Raj gave me this idea in the middle of a show one time, and he would like you do a hat and it's like, and if you're feeling good, mm-hmm. right, your hat is forward and you go like, we are so back. And then like if things are not going well, you turn it around and it says it's Jover right here, like or thank you fans. Like that's the only thing that I would wanna launch on a merch thing. Cause yeah. But anyway, check out your guys' merch, check out your guys' channels. This has been a blast. Have a great rest of your guys' day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you guys after game one.